Good evening. Hoping everyone is doing well. It's wonderful to see everybody here tonight. Let us begin. This week's parsha is Parshas Vayechi. It's the last parsha of Sefer Bereishis. Baruch Hashem. The Torah tells us in Parshas Miketz, after Yosef had shown himself to be an interpreter of dreams, Paro was enamored and impressed with Yosef enough that he made him the Mishnah Lamelech, the second in command. As the Torah tells us, Vayarkev oso b'mirkeves ha-mishnah asher lo. And he, referring to Paro, had him ride in his second chariot, V'nason oso al kol eretz Mitzrayim, and he appointed him over the entire land of Egypt. Vayomer Paro el Yosef. Paro said to Yosef, Ani Paro, I am Paro. Ubil adecho lo yorim ish es yodov es raglo b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. And without you, no man will be allowed to lift up his hand or his foot in the entire Eretz Mitzrayim. Paro had given Yosef HaTzadik total control of the entire Eretz Mitzrayim. That's a lofty position. That isn't ceremonial. It isn't like a vice president of the United States that really is ceremonial, doesn't really do much. It's not like the Queen of England. The second command was given authority. People turned to Yosef to give advice. And Paro empowered Yosef in this position. Then how do we understand toward the end of our Parsha, Parshas Vayichi, in the aftermath of Yaakov's death? The Torah tells us, Vayavru yimei b'chiso, that the days of crying had passed, Vayidaber Yosef el beis Paro lemor, and Yosef spoke to the household of Paro, saying, Imna motzasi chein beinechem, if it finds favor in your eyes, Dabru na ba'azne Paro lemor, speak now into the ears of Paro, saying, Avi hishbiani lemor, my father had me swear, Hine anochi meis, that I'm going to die b'kivri asher karizi le. And ultimately, he entrusted that Yosef, when he was going to die, would ultimately bury, Yaakov would be buried in Eretz Canaan. And now Yosef turns to the beis Paro, to the household of Paro, and says that my father had given me direct instructions not to be buried in Mitzrayim. Please let me go and bury him in Eretz Canaan. Why would Yosef have to come and ask permission from the beis Paro, from the house of Paro, to be able to go and take Yaakov to Eretz Canaan? Yosef was second in command. Yosef could have directly went to Paro. To come and speak to the house of Paro, it wasn't necessary. Paro had given total authority to Yosef to do as he wished, whatever he wanted. It seems very odd that Yosef would come and have to ask the beis Paro to intercede on his behalf, that he should be able to be given permission by Paro to go and bury his father in Eretz Canaan. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky comes and says, we see from here that everything that happened to Yosef, in becoming Mishnah Lamelech, second in command, it must have been only Mischuso Shel Yaakov, in the merit of Yaakov. As long as Yaakov was alive, Yosef had the authority, the ability to do as he wished. But once Yaakov was dead, once he had died, Yosef felt that that schus, that merit, was no longer, and therefore he felt compelled to ask Paro's permission. That's the explanation of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. However, we're going to offer a different insight. That's question number one. Question number two. Yaakov, before he died, he called all of the children, all of his children in, and he wanted to give them a bracha. He wanted to bless them. And when it came to Shimon and Levi, the Torah tells us that Yaakov had said, Shimon v'Levi achim. Shimon and Levi are brothers. Kilei chamas mecheroseihem. Klei chamas, tools of injustice, are their livelihood. And the Ramban comes and helps us understand, what does that mean that Shimon and Levi are brothers? Obviously, they're brothers. What is Yaakov coming to add by identifying that Shimon and Levi are brothers, and perhaps at the exclusion of all the other Shvatim? The Ramban comes and understands these words of Yaakov to his children before he was about to die. V'hanachon be'enai. Says the Ramban, it appears to me, Sha'omar kishimon v'levi achim gemurim. They were complete brothers to one another. Domim umisachim zeloze ba'atzosom umaseim. Meaning that they were domim, they were similar and bore brotherly resemblance. They were domim zeloze to each other in the way that they acted, the way that they thought, the way they conducted themselves. Everything about them shouted that these are brothers. Doesn't mean that the others obviously weren't brothers, but it means that these were the brothers that hung out with each other. They thought in the same way. They acted in the same way. They were very similar. You couldn't distinguish one from another in how they conducted, how they acted, how they engaged people, how they thought about life, their hashkafos hachayim. And yet, as the story unfolds, and as we learn more about Shimon and Levi, they could not have had two distinct ends, two different, opposite sides of the spectrum. After all, Levi, Moshe Rabbeinu was from the tribe of Levi. Aaron HaKohen was from the tribe of Levi. Miriam was from the tribe of Levi. Shehayu Roei Yisrael, the shepherds of Klal Yisrael, came from the seed of Levi. And Shimon, the children of Shimon, Zimri ben Salu. Zimri ben Salu, just to recollect, he was involved in the whole episode where there was a plague of 24,000 members of his tribe. He was the prince of that tribe, and he was involved in cohabitating with a Gentile woman. And ultimately, it was Pinchas who came and killed Zimri ben Salu, who was the tribal leader from Shimon. So you have, the Ramban comes and tells us, two similar people. People who were brotherly in every sense of the word. They looked alike. They talked alike. They thought alike. Their hashkavos achayim were identical. They acted the same way. And yet as the story unfolds and as their lives develop, Levi was zochet to have the Roei Yisrael, the shepherds of Klal Yisrael. And Shimon will forever remain in infamy, synonymous with corruption and plague and destruction. How is it possible that they were so alike, and yet, ultimately, they became so different? And especially when Yaakov Avinu came on his deathbed and said that these two are achim. They're in every sense of the word, they're brothers. Does that mean that the bracha of their father wasn't actualized, that it didn't come to fruition? And while we're speaking about brachos, what really were the brachos that Yaakov had insisted on giving his children as he laid on his deathbed? After all, if you look at the brachos, are they actually brachos? Were they blessings like you and I know when we go to a gadol, when we go to a mekubal? He comes and he tells us, you'll have bracha v'hatzlocha. You're going to be given wealth and ashirus and prosperity, and you're going to find your zivug, your shidduch. Live in that community, be involved in this area of life. Those are the brachos that we've associated with gedolim, with leaders, with generational leaders, with the gedolei hador. We wait in line for hours to receive the blessings because we anticipate they're going to tell us something that we didn't know, something that will give us insight. But yet, if you look at the brachos that Yaakov had given his children before he was about to die, it's anything but that. For example, he told Yehuda that he's as strong as a lion. We knew that already. In Parshas Vayigash, we already knew that Yehuda was strong. We already knew 80%. The Shvatim already knew 80% of what Yaakov called and told them as he was about to die. Naphtali, Sheiya, Kal, Lorutz, it'll be easy for him to run. In all probability, Naphtali had many races as he was growing up, and he already knew that he was fleet on his feet. He already had known that he had that advantage over all of the other tribes. And what is Yaakov adding by telling Yehuda that he was a Gibor Ke'ari or Naphtali, that he's Kal Lorutz, Ke'ayola Shalucha? This is what the brothers were called in for as Yaakov was about to die? Perhaps the only thing that Yaakov could have offered was him telling Klal Yisrael when the end of time will be, when Mashiach will come, and that he wasn't even allowed to tell them. That would have been a chidush. That would have been a novel idea that they had not known, and they did not know, and now they would know because Yaakov had come and revealed, divulged when the end of time will be. But he didn't do that. Instead, he told them things that were obvious. What's so special? What's so important? What is he adding that they didn't already know? I believe to answer this question, we have to speak the words of Yaakov that he had shared with Ephraim and Menashe. Those famous words, Hamalach Hagoel Osimi Kol Ra. This is Yaakov talking to his grandchildren. And he said, Hamalach Hagoel, may the angel who redeems me, Hamalach Hagoel Osimi Kol Ra, from all evil, Yivorech Hasel Anarim, bless these na'arim, these young boys, v'ikare v'ahem shemi, and may my name be called out upon them. V'shem avosai Avraham v'yitzchak, and the names of my fathers, Avraham and Yitzchak, v'yidgu larov b'kerav ha'aret, and may they multiply abundantly like the fish within the land. And there are many explanations as to what that means, v'yidgu larov, that they may multiply like the fish. So Rashi comes and gives a simple understanding as to what it means. But the Medrash in Breishis Rabbah comes and explains what does that mean, v'yidgu l'rov? What ultimately was Yaakov being mevarech? What was Yaakov trying to inspire with the words v'yidgu l'rov? What was he trying to instill or to infuse or to be mevarech, to bless Ephraim and Manasseh by using the words v'yidgu l'rov? That they should multiply like the fish. So the Medrash comes and tells us something fascinating. Ma dogim halalu gedolim b'mayim. Just like the dog, the fish, is raised in water. And kevan sheyoredes tipa achas milimala. And when a tipa of mayim, when a drop of water falls from above, Mikablim osa bitsimon, the fish, they hurry up to that little drop of water as if they've never seen water before. Kimo shelo tamu mayim miyaman, as if they've never experienced a taste of water. You ever see, but you go into an ocean and there are fish circling around, you drop a little droplet of water. All of a sudden the fish start scurrying and they start looking for that drop. Kain hein Yisrael. So too is Yisrael. Gedolim b'mayim. Klal Yisrael. We are raised b'mayim. Mayim we know is Torah. And kevon shehem shomim dovar chadosh min haTorah. But since we hear something new in Torah, even though we're in Torah all day, but when we hear a new concept, a new idea, mekablim osa bitzimon, we accept it as if we're thirsty. We've never experienced it before. Kemo shelo shomu divrei Torah, as if we've never heard or experienced Torah in our days. Reb Aaron Cutler explains this fascinating medrash to mean that what does that mean that we hear something new? It's as if when we hear Torah, it's something new. He says that every moment of a person's life is a new moment. He's born again. We look at our lives as one life, 1 year. This is my 44th year of existence. And every week has 7 days. And every day has 24 hours. And every hour has 60 minutes. And every minute has 60 seconds. Explains Reb Aaron Cutler. It's not simply one idea, one day, one month, 1 year. But rather every moment of every person's life is hischadshus, is a new beginning, is a new awakening, is a new inspiration, is a rebirth. It's a hischatshus, it's an entirely new existence and a new life. As we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mechadesh b'chol yom tamid ma'aseh breishis, every day is a new creation. But it's more than every day, it's every moment. So right now, we are living in a moment in our lives. And in one moment will be an entirely new existence in our lives. And says Reb Aaron Cutler, that's how we understand that Adam Nidon Bechol Shah, that a person is judged at every moment of his life because every moment is a new creation. Which means that whatever my life was just a few moments ago, I'm not allowed to take for granted that in a few moments from now, I will have those same kochos, those same abilities, those same gifts from God. Because I'm judged right now. So whatever I had 2 minutes ago, I can't assume that God is going to give me them 2 minutes from now. We can't take that for granted. Indeed, the Shvatim knew their kochos. Yehuda knew that he was a gibor. He knew that he was a strong person. Naphtali knew that he was quick. The Torah is made, the Torah tells us this, and they knew it themselves. But when Yaakov called his sons over before he was about to die and blessed them with all of those kochos that they already had, what he was telling them is, my dear children, the greatest gift that I can teach you is, don't take for granted the natural gifts that have been given to you by the Almighty. Don't assume that they will be yours forever. You might have had them until now. They might have been natural, God-given. But who's to say that you will continue to have those gifts? I am teaching you that I am reawakening those gifts within you to let you know, don't make any assumptions about your life. Don't assume that just because you are a gibor, you are strong 2 minutes ago, that 2 minutes from now you'll have that same strength. Life is very precarious. We can't make any assumptions about life, and especially in the climate that we live in today. We can't take anything for granted. Nothing is set in stone. Now that might sound paralyzing. It might sound demoralizing. It might not give me any sense of security that nothing is set in stone. But actually, it's a great matana from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a great gift from Hashem. Because if it was that our lives are etched in stone, Levi would have had the very same demise as his brother Shimon. But Rav Shimon Schwab says, because life is not set in stone, our physical abilities, our natural abilities that God had given us is not set in stone, but neither is our spiritual DNA as well. And even though Yaakov Avinu came and said that you are achim, you are brotherly in every sense of the word, domim umisachim zelozem, meaning they were similar and bore brotherly resemblance to each other. But yet, as Rav Shimon Schwab says, Shnei ha'achim shimu musar avim lifnei moso. Two brothers heard the musar of their father before he was about to die. Yaakov said that you're together, you're both brotherly, you had the same idea of acting with a vengeance against Shechem. They heard the musar of their father. However, tolchachos Yaakov, the rebuke of Yaakov, orura teshuvah, inspired repentance, yoser amuka, more so in the shevet of Levi. It's not etched in stone. Whatever was doesn't mean it has to be. It all depends upon how much a person is able to realize that we can't take any assumptions in life, whether our physical abilities or whether our spiritual deficiencies, they don't have to be deficiencies. And our physical abilities aren't given either. because that was the lesson. That was the last savah. That was the last will and testament of Yaakov. That was the underlying message that Yaakov had given his children as he was about to die. Don't take for granted life. Don't make any assumptions. Yosef, in the aftermath of his father's death, Vaidaber Yosef el Beis Paro. Yosef spoke to the house of Paro and said, please, if you find favor, speak to Paro and tell him that I gave my father my word that I was going to bury him in Eretz Canaan. Yes, he was made Mishnah Lamelech. He was second in command. But Yosef just heard his father, don't take your position for granted. Don't make any assumptions. Don't assume that just because Paro months ago or years ago had made you second in command, that doesn't mean that now the same will be true. And ultimately we know that it wasn't true. Because what happens in the beginning of next week's Parsha? What does the Torah tell us? Vayokam melech chodosh al Mitzrayim. And a new king arose over Egypt, asher lo yoda es Yosef, that didn't know Yosef. And Rashi comes and gives two different explanations what that means. Vayokam melech chodosh al Mitzrayim. Rav Ushmuel. One says it was chodosh mamish. It was a new Paro, it was a new king. Paro was just a name given to the king of Egypt. But Bechad Omar, one says, Shen ischachu gzerosav. He issued new edicts, new decrees. Yaakov, in his infinite wisdom, was warning his children, don't make any assumptions. Don't assume just because you were the Mishnah Lamelech today that tomorrow you will be as well. Yosef understood that. Yaakov, in his prophetic view of the world, saw what was going to happen. That indeed, Paro enacted new edicts, new decrees. But Klal Yisrael, or at least Yosef, was prepared. Such a valuable lesson. An unbelievable lesson of Yaakov. Yaakov calling his children, giving them the greatest blessing. Don't take for granted your God-given abilities. And don't take for granted as well, and don't assume that just because you're deficient spiritually now, that it always has to be like that. Things can change. And that ultimately was Yaakov's lasting message to the Shvatim. Have a wonderful night.